Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
I know Chris Lewis is excited about the NBA Finals. He's been excited since round one, probably since game one of the regular season. For me, I have watched very little of the first three rounds of the NBA playoffs, but it's appointment TV for me tonight. We have the two teams that everybody cares about, the two teams that are going to put on a show. And Chris Lewis, I disagree with the pundits. I disagree with the odds makers. I think we're going to have a great series that's going to go six or seven games and have at least half of them come down to the wire.
All right, so with your experience of watching the NBA playoffs, after you just said you've watched every single minute of it.
Yeah.
You have a prediction and a bold prediction as to what exactly is going to happen between these two teams. So I like that. But hey, that's the fun part about it. Everybody has a prediction. Everybody has something to say about the legacies of the players involved. So you said it's six or seven games. I want to know how those six or seven games are going to go in your mind. Who wins?
I think Golden State's going to win. I think they have the more talent than Cleveland has from top to bottom, but I think Cleveland has the best player on the court in LeBron James. I also think Kyrie Irving is significantly better than he was last year. I think Love and Tristan Thompson are playing well. So I think the Cleveland team that won last year isn't as good as this Cleveland team, but I think the Golden State team is better, the addition of Kevin Durant, and I also think they're not going to make some of the mistakes they made last year, i.e. having Draymond Green getting suspended for a game, which I think turned the whole series.
It did. I guess Warriors were primed to win that one in five before that happened. So what will be the narratives coming out of it then? So the Warriors win. Are we talking about LeBron being a bum or LeBron losing in finals? Are we talking about Kevin Durant being a breakthrough star now? Is it Steph Curry that has a big series? I want to know what we're going to be talking about at the end of this series.
I think it's going to be that Durant made the difference, that he put them over the top, that he's going to have a good series. I think, as I said, I believe we're going to have good games. So I think people might be disappointed that Cleveland doesn't win. But for me, I don't think LeBron's had the better team the majority of times he's been to the finals. So I'm not holding it against him for the fact that he'll have a losing record in finals. I think the fact that he's been there eight times is pretty darn impressive.
Indeed, I agree. I just don't think we'll be that understanding as a sports community. If somebody wins, that means somebody loses. And if somebody loses, we're going to blame somebody, whether it's LeBron or whether it's Kyrie or whether it's Ty Lue. Somebody's going to be catching them L's if, you know, Cleveland doesn't win this and they lose it in six or seven. Are you officially going to pick six or seven? You need to have a definitive number.
I'll go Golden State in seven. I think we're going to have a good series, and I think it's going to go the distance. So I'm going to go Golden State getting it done at home, reversing what happened last year.
All right, so that's where you're leaning. I'll get into some of the other, like, inside X's and O's factors that could get involved, but I'll give you the big theme right here. I'm going Cleveland in six. I am way off from where a lot of these other people, you mentioned the pundits, Vegas, experts, quote unquote, who say Warriors in five is a popular prediction, Warriors in six, they don't see this thing going seven. You know, Golden State 67 wins and haven't lost yet in the playoffs, but the Cavs have been darn near just as impressive in the Eastern Conference, and you can make the case that the teams that Cleveland played en route to the NBA Finals may be a tougher path than what Golden State ended up having to go through in the Western Conference. When you're talking about Portland, Utah, and a Spurs team that was missing Kawhi Leonard for most of the series, and when he was playing, Golden State was down by 25 in that game. Are we really going to be thrown off the scent of Cleveland that much for one loss? Like, seriously, they lost one playoff game. One game where LeBron wasn't at an A-plus level and he struggled in a game. And one game where Cleveland just didn't have it at home against Boston. And that game is enough to put everybody on the side of Golden State when we saw these teams match up last year. And again, I know Kevin Durant, he'll certainly be a big factor in the series, but a lot of the things that Cleveland did that worked against Golden State last year, Golden State adding Kevin Durant isn't going to solve all those problems. Like, it's not going to solve, all right, LeBron James has the basketball and Kyrie Irving sets a screen and it forces a switch and now Steph Curry's guarding LeBron James. And then he's going to back him down and it's going to either force a double and LeBron's going to find a shooter, or it's going to be a mouse in the house and LeBron James scoring in the post. There's a lot of individual matchups like that That put me on the side of Cleveland. Cleveland's offense this postseason has been the best offense in the playoffs ever. Like, their offensive rating is off the charts. It's better than Golden State's, and it's a better offense than Golden State has certainly seen in the playoffs this year. San Antonio is in a prep without Kawhi Leonard for what they're about to see from LeBron and company. Give me the best player in the series. You're giving me a guy who hit the game-winning shot in the NBA Finals in Golden State. Home court advantage can't mean too much because Cleveland last year went into Oracle in a Game 7 and won it in the NBA. That never happens, especially in the Finals where a road team goes in and wins a Game 7 like that, and Cleveland already has that notch in their belt. So all those reasons lead me to think that this is Cleveland's, and I am just shocked at how big of an underdog they are.
You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Bob and Chris, we're talking about the NBA Finals that start tonight down in Oakland. This is the thing I don't understand, and this is where I want you, who've watched the NBA all season, how do these BPI and 538s come up with a 90% and 90-plus percent chance that the Warriors win the series? And they even break it down into Cleveland's going to have only chances to win in 6 and 7, and Golden State can win in 4, 5, 6, or 7. I took Golden State in 7. You think Cleveland's going to win. So how do these folks come up with Golden State in a rout?
Easy. Those models are based off of regular season basketball. And I don't necessarily believe too much in the ability to, quote, flip a switch. But if you've watched Cleveland play in the playoffs, there was something flipped, whether it was a switch or whether it was LeBron going into postseason mode. But like, those models were based off of a team that wasn't the one seed. It was based off of the fact that they were pretty bad defensively over the second half of the year. Now, one of the things that we're going to learn in game one, and as the series moves on, have the Cavs been more lucky in the playoffs, who they faced, and the fact that their defense hasn't been taken advantage of, because Golden State will test a defense that has been markedly better in the postseason. But the reason why those models are so off base, and why I think 538 gave Cleveland like an 8% chance of reaching the NBA Finals at the start of the playoffs, which is like, what are you doing?
I wish I could bet them.
Yeah, because it's based off of regular season sample size when Cleveland was experimenting. They had a lot of injuries. They finally kind of got healthy at the end of the year. What really gave me that confidence is the game they had at the end of the regular season against Boston. Like, you saw, okay, when they're engaged, when they're locked in, okay, they can defend. Okay, they still have LeBron James. You know what? Kyrie Irving is still explosive with the ball. Kevin Love, by the way, is playing a lot better, but he will be a strange factor within this series because he is a target on defense. And how will Golden State try to maximize the fact that he is such a bad defender to give Golden State the benefit? But Cleveland's going to want to have him on the court because of the floor spacing that it gives. But can he play with Tristan Thompson? That's another thing that with these X's and O's, which makes it like a football game. I feel like we're talking about it because there was a week off in between games, so you can analyze it from every angle, just like the 2 weeks that are in between the NFC and AFC championship game and the Super Bowl. It's really given the feel like it's a football matchup, and you're looking at it from that point of view more than you do a typical basketball game.
Well, and I also think that you've got good players on both sides. I didn't see either of these teams from the beginning getting challenged in any series. I knew we were going to get to this spot.
Yeah.
And so you weren't pressed. Golden State and Cleveland did not work up a sweat to get here. And I think that's why people have focused in. I think both teams are better than they were last year. Cleveland's really shot the ball well in the playoffs. Their three-point percentage has been unbelievable, and I think that's one of the things Golden State's going to have to cool off, because if Cleveland shoots the three-point ball the way they've been shooting it during the playoffs, Golden State could be in trouble.
Cleveland's better on offense than Golden State. It's hard to like look at the roster and say like somebody could be better offensively than a team that has Steph Curry and Kevin Durant on it, but every metric you could use would say Cleveland's offense is better. Now, Golden State's defense is significantly better than Cleveland's against the league, but this isn't facing the league. This is facing this specific Cleveland team, and there's parts about this specific Cleveland team that we'll get to in a second here that I think is still tough for Golden State to have that kind of defense on. So LeBron is going to get it done, and now by the end of the series, we're going to talk about him in the same sentence as Jordan, and nobody can cringe after that.
Hit KTIK.com tomorrow at 9 a.m. for a sweet deal on Bear Valley River Rafting. Experience a half-day main payette trip for only $25 or get a $50 value good towards another trip. Bear Valley Rafting, led by the most experienced rafting guides, only 45 minutes from Boise. Sweet deals begin tomorrow at 9 a.m. at KTIK.com. When we come back, why do I see Derek Jeter when I see Steph Curry? I think these guys are very, very similar. That's next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. NBA Finals begin tonight. Mountain Time Zone has it great. 7 o'clock start, so you can kind of eat, stroll in for the game. Even if it goes overtime, it's going to be done by 10.
I like the 7 o'clock starts, too. They're perfect. That's with the East Coast. When you're local, you get the 7 o'clock starts for most of the East Coast games. So, yeah, I'm happy with this start time. It's very convenient. Eat dinner, watch some hoops.
When I see Steph Curry, the guy that comes to mind that I compare him to is Derek Jeter. Wow. And I know Derek Jeter's not one of Chris's favorite guys. I'm just making a list to myself of what I think Curry and Jeter have in common. And to me, they seem like very similar guys and very similar players. Both were picked in the first round, so both were expected to be good. Curry went 8th, Jeter went 6th. Both have led good teams. Both have the ability to play well with others. Mm-hmm. Both are smaller players, not really known for power in their game. Jeter didn't hit a whole lot of home runs compared to most of the players in the league. And, of course, Curry's not inside with the trees taking it. Both guys have done well on the big stage. And maybe this is where I look at it even more. Both are very recognizable. Faces of their team, marquee players. Fans love them. I don't think you can find anybody really to say anything bad about either one of these guys off the court or off the field. And to me, if any one of these two were involved in something, Chris, that would be a little bit on the bad side,
scandalous.
I'd be shocked. Scandalous. I would be absolutely shocked.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good down the line. Now, I think if you compare Steph Curry to Derek Jeter, like, is the outrage on the fact that you're putting him at the level of Derek Jeter, or would the outrage typically be that you're not having him high enough on the plateau? Like, I don't know. Like, that's why it might be a perfect comparison. Mm-hmm. I think more people would be upset that you'd put him on the same level as Derek Jeter, because I think there's less people who are critical of Derek Jeter than they are of people who are critical of Steph Curry. And maybe it's just the nature of basketball. It's not an individual sport, but it's more individually based than baseball is, to where, if you don't come through in a game of the finals, you're going to be ripped. If you go 0-for-4 in a World Series game, I don't necessarily think that you're going to get slammed unless it's a repeated thing. You turn into Alex Rodriguez with the Yankees in the postseason, where you have a lot of games where you're hitting below your mark that you typically do in the regular season. And Jeter, say what you want, his numbers slightly go up in the postseason, and Steph Curry's numbers, at least in the NBA Finals, 2015, he got a bad rap. He didn't get the Finals MVP, so people didn't think he had a great series. He actually had a better series than you would think. 2016, which was last year, he did not have a great series there. So I think the comparison is valid from a production standpoint and from the other things standpoint, like the characters, fans love him, very recognizable guy. I just think a lot of people would be like, wait a minute, hold off on putting Steph Curry at the Derek Jeter level. Although, again, I'm on the other side of that, because I think we've built up Derek Jeter to more of the New York famous baseball player more than he was the actual greatest player of his era, or even like the greatest shortstop of his era. I don't even think he was that. So Steph Curry is probably closer to the best player in his sport than Derek Jeter ever was at the best player of his sport.
But I don't think either one can be, because they both have a couple deficiencies, and I think both are on the defensive side. You've talked at length about the ability for teams to try to force a switch where Curry's going to have to guard somebody bigger, and he had a lot of problems with that. Derek Jeter's biggest problem, in my opinion, was in range. His range as a shortstop wasn't as good as a lot of other shortstops in baseball. So I think both of them have a few shortcomings on the defensive end that maybe go to somebody not being overly big, somebody maybe not being as good on the defensive end as you would like to see. Derek Jeter did it for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. Curry's done it for quite a few years. Both teams have gotten to the finals. Difference between basketball and baseball, you mentioned about basketball, you can be more likely the GOAT, and I don't mean it all in capital letters. I mean with the small g, the one that might eat grass. Because you can take every shot. You can take 30 shots. If you're a baseball player, whether you're good or bad, you bat one out of every nine times, and you're probably going to bat four or five tops in the course of a nine-inning game.
Yeah. Looking at Jeter, you know, put some of his numbers down. What, 308 was that postseason average?
These are all postseason numbers.
20 home runs in the postseason, being in the postseason 16 times. Now, a lot of that is, like, it's so hard with baseball because I don't think one player has the impact, as we brought out. Like, one basketball player could take 30 shots if they wanted to. A baseball player is limited in the at-bats. So, like, are we crediting Jeter as the reason they got to the playoffs that many times? Or is it because he was on the Yankees and they outspent so many teams during the era that Derek Jeter was there? They spent more money than, like, at times their whole division combined. So, of course, they're going to make the postseason when you do that.
But in fairness, if Curry played for, I don't know, who's at the very bottom right now? The Kings, the Sixers. Yeah. If he was on those teams for the last 5 years, he wouldn't be making the playoffs.
Yeah, it's fair, although, like, you know, Golden State wasn't exactly the capital letters Warriors that they are now when Steph just got there, and a big part of them being built up was because he shook off the ankle injuries and became a megastar, which is why he's underpaid, by the way. He is only making, what, 11 mil because of the ankle injuries that he had when he got his contract extension. So he's not making the money that typical big stars make.
And then you look at Jeter was the guy that came and maybe was the one that put the Yankees over the top as far as for their big run. Joe Torre came at the same time. He might have had a hand in it, you know, a good coach leading the Yankees, replacing Buck Showalter. So I think a lot of similarities. I mean, you look at this Golden State team now, they remind me of a Yankee kind of team, a good team that goes out and gets somebody in Durant like the Yankees did in that run when they went out and signed Roger Clemens.
Yeah, so I like it. I like the comparison because, yeah, maybe Derek Jeter's a little bit lower on my list of great baseball players than he is on others. And Steph Curry isn't at the, you know, at times last year, he was the best player in basketball in the regular season. I don't think you can deny that, what he was doing at points last year. He's not the best player in basketball. He might be third. I would probably have him behind LeBron. Well, definitely behind LeBron. Probably behind Kawhi. And probably behind Durant, too. And have him right in that 3-4 mix. And at times, maybe Derek Jeter was the fourth, fifth, sixth best player in baseball. So there it is. I think it is a fair comparison.
All right, let's go to my Jordan Pippen theory. If you have the best two players on the floor in a basketball game, you are going to win. If we're going to have a pickup game between the Warriors and the Cavaliers, is there any debate that LeBron would be the first pick?
LeBron, yes.
Okay. Who would be picked second, do you think?
I think it'd probably be Durant.
Okay.
Right? To have a, you know, 7-footer with that kind of range. I think Durant is probably the second pick.
Okay. If the Durant team gets to pick again, because we're going to do a snake,
yeah.
Who do they take? They take Curry? Do they take Irving? Do they take, who do they take?
I mean, this is what could be what decides the series, is the matchup, because they're probably going to guard each other quite a bit. It's Steph versus Kyrie. I think you'd have to say Steph, based on resume, on, you know, consistency. Like, Kyrie can be explosive, 40-plus point type games, but he also can give you a 6-for-24 and not give you much else because he is a minus defensively. He's probably worse defensively, by the way, than Steph is, but he just doesn't get that kind of criticism.
All right, so Irving then would go fourth. If you were the LeBron team, you'd take Irving?
Yeah.
So far it's shaping up to the Warriors and the Cavaliers.
Correct.
The LeBron team would pick again, correct, in the snake?
So it's what, between, it's probably going to be Dre, right?
Okay. So Green now plays with LeBron?
Although, and, like, if we're trying to build it from, like, matchup, like, LeBron and Draymond are kind of similar in styles to where, like, their effectiveness together wouldn't be the greatest.
Good. So maybe you wouldn't take him?
Yeah, so, like, probably from
would
that
you take
standpoint,
Thompson?
You would probably
would you
pick
take,
Clay. You'd probably pick Clay.
So Clay would come over to that
team. Yeah.
Okay, and then who would the Durant-Steph team? They'd get two picks.
We got now Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson, probably.
So they would go to that team. Now we've completely kind of shuffled up the team.
Yeah, now Iguodala would probably be the next one on the list, just trying to run it all the way down.
So you'd have basically two on each team.
Yeah.
So well, based on the talent, based on this, it should be close.
Yeah, it's pretty even. Like, again, it's not some drastic gap in talent, and especially the way Kevin Love has been playing on the offensive end this year, and he's not been exposed defensively yet, and maybe the Warriors are the team that can do it. I have a couple of keys. I know we don't have that much time.
Go
but
for it.
I'm going to get a couple, and we can maybe do some of them later. Number one, Andre Iguodala is going to have to hit some three-pointers, and Draymond Green perhaps the same, because the way they're going to defend the screen, they might trap the Curry-Draymond pick and roll, and that would make Draymond pop. And if Draymond's open for three, or if he's slipping for three, they're not going to chase him off the line. They're not going to allow the driving lane for him to get into the lane and create for others. He's going to have open looks from three. Typically, he does turn them down. But in Game 7, for example, last year, he was really good from behind the arc in that game. Kept them in it until they made a run in the third quarter to take a lead that they eventually blew. So, you know, if Draymond stays hot from deep, he's been that way a lot of the playoffs, that's big. But Andre Iguodala even more than that, because the Hamptons 5 lineup, the lineup with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, and Andre Iguodala in at the center spot, where they slide Draymond Green to the center. The benefit of that lineup for the Warriors, there is no place for a bad defender to hide. Kevin Love is a bad defender. He would have to guard somebody there. He can't guard Draymond Green because he'll be setting screens and now you'll have to involve him in ball action. You don't want to do that. But if Andre Iguodala is missing threes, you could put Kevin Love on Andre Iguodala and really not be at a deficit from the Cleveland perspective. Now you get the benefit of Kevin Love on offense, the floor stretching ability, the rebounding too, without him really costing you on defense because Iguodala's out there in the corner missing a bunch of threes. So as far as one of the keys to watch in this game and as the series moves on, is Andre Iguodala healthy and is his shot on? If it's not, that could be a problem.
Fish, we got the update coming up next. What's in it?
Well, a Boise State coach and a former Capital High grad both made the College Football Hall of Fame ballot, plus another blue turf in college football.
Right now, we've got a chance for you to get some new Golden State, Cleveland, or NFL gear at the Pro Image in Boise Town Square, the Karcher Mall, or the Village in Meridian. Be the ninth caller right now at 424-9300 to win a $50 gift card. That's 424-9300, and keep listening till 6 p.m. for your chance to win every hour on Sports Radio The Ticket.
The Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by the Oahe Tavern. Doing business over lunch or meeting your friends in downtown Boise, make it new and exciting at the Oahe Tavern Steak and Sea on 11th and Main. Well, the 2018 College Football Hall of Fame ballot was released today. Boise State defensive backs coach Ashley Ambrose and Capital High graduate Jake Plummer were both named on the ballot. Ambrose played for Mississippi Valley State back in the early 90s, and Jake Plummer played quarterback for Arizona State in the late 90s.
And again, to get on the ballot, you've had to be a first-team All-American, so it's not that easy to get on the ballot. Ambrose had a wonderful career at Mississippi Valley State, 17 career interceptions. How about this? 7 kick/punt returns for touchdowns.
Wow.
7 of them. 3 kick returns, 4 punt returns for TDs, and then went on to play 13 years in the NFL. And I remember Jake Plummer playing at Arizona State, undefeated regular season, led him to the Rose Bowl, and lost to Ohio State in the Rose Bowl in a really good game, and had a wonderful career. He went on, had some decent years in the pros as well, but these numbers, the pros are not supposed to factor whether you were good or bad in the pros.
And speaking of Boise State, the color scheme has been released for the season. Home opener with Troy will be tricolor with blue, orange, and white. Mexico will be orange and orange out. Virginia will be a blue out. Wyoming will be blue and orange. Nevada will be checkered with blue and orange alternating. And then finally, Air Force will be spirit, where you can wear any color.
I think that's really hard to be able to coordinate checkers. Like, I think that would be very difficult to accomplish, but if you can pull it off, it looks really good, unless you're, like, handing out the shirts. And I don't think that happens where they, like, handed out the shirts. But what stood out about the color schemes? No black.
Yep.
So, would that mean no blackouts this year? Or at least none of the color schemes match the blackout if Boise State decides to wear the black jerseys. Of course, the jersey unveil that they had earlier this week and the colors they displayed, blue, orange, and white, nothing with black and nothing with gray.
Do you think people really care which color? Like the ones when there's a multicolor where there's either blue and orange or blue, orange, and white. You think people, when they look at this, darn it, my section's in the different color. I prefer blue or I prefer orange or I prefer white.
I mean, if you have more blue gear than orange gear, but I feel like if you're a Boise State fan at this point, you probably have an orange shirt and you probably have a blue shirt, right? You can make it work either
one. You probably can, but I know people that some people love looking, they think they look better in blue. Some people think they look better in orange.
Ooh, am I an orange and blue guy? I mean, Syracuse, Boise State, orange and blue. They're the colors that work for me.
If that works. And speaking of blue, Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, they have been approved by Boise State to install a blue turf. Boise State owns the trademark for all non-green fields being installed, which means they have to give approval. Wake State did that. There was no cost in the approval, and the college plans to install the field either in the summer of this year or next year in 2018.
And tomorrow, the Luther College AD is going to be on with Caves and Prater. So they will be telling us about their idea to go to Blue Turf.
Yeah, I was wondering, do we know the motivation for it?
Like, no, not that we know. We'll have to listen tomorrow. I don't know.
What's going on? What do they need the blue field for?
It's magic. It's magic. It guarantees wins.
That's, there you go. I suppose, unless it's against Air Force.
Oh, wow. No.
That's
too soon.
That's kind of
too soon. Come on.
All right, but I will say this. Boise couldn't get nothing out of the deal? Like, is there anything in Iowa that we would want here in Boise? Anything, like corn?
Bushel of corn.
Yeah. Can we get some corn out of the deal? Something? Like, I'm sure if we needed something from somebody else, we could offer potatoes.
Yeah.
Come on, man. I want some corn.
You want some corn?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we can get that done. And speaking of getting some money, Kevin Durant might not get all the money he is worth, because despite being eligible for a raise as a max contract, as a 10-year vet in the NBA, a league source has told ESPN, the Warriors superstar Kevin Durant is willing to take less money this offseason. That means keeping the Warriors core intact. Both Durant and Curry are up for new contracts this season, in addition to Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala, who are both free agents. Iguodala and Livingston have been key parts of the Warriors' bench. And Durant has also said on multiple occasions he plans on staying in Golden State for many years, so he's being a team player, taking less money to keep the core intact.
Yeah, you hope it works out for him and it doesn't turn into the Dirk Nowitzki situation. Dirk Nowitzki stayed giving money up to Mark Cuban to sign people that they never actually signed. Like, every single year it was, all right, take a pay cut, Dirk. It'll come out of your salary, but we can stay competitive. And since 2011, have they really been competitive?
No.
No. So if you spoke to Dirk Nowitzki about this, I think he would maybe suggest taking a different path. Would a John... I was going to say John Calipari, the Connecticut coach. Why am I blanking on his name?
Calhoun?
Yeah, Calhoun. There we go.
Well, old coach or the new one? Kevin Ollie or Calhoun?
Calhoun. Not a dime back. My favorite quote that he had.
I do remember that. Yeah. Yeah, they wanted him to take a pay cut or something. Yeah.
Saying that he's making too much money for a state employee. Not a dime back. So that's his attitude.
And speaking of the Warriors, Steve Kerr, he might return to the bench. He has said at some point he's looking to return for the Warriors, possibly tonight. Mike Brown said he doesn't know if Kerr plans to try and coach tonight, though Brown did tell Michael Wilbon that the Warriors head coaches talked as a possibility. Brown even said, you know what, Kerr, walk out. If you can't do it, just walk into the back and I'll take over for you. Team will not know until closer to the 7 p.m. Mountain Time tip-off whether or not Kerr will be the coach for Game 1. Kerr last coached the Warriors in Game 2, which that would be really interesting if they just have a last-minute coaching change right as tip-off starts.
Do you have like a Willis Reed moment if they need a boost? Steve Kerr out from the tunnel and a round of applause from the Oracle fans. And that's the boost that they need to make a big run and come from behind fast in the steal game one. I mean, is that not a potential story?
I just wonder also if maybe he doesn't come back in the middle of the series. If one team or the other is ahead, how that might be viewed. Like if Golden State, say, is down and he comes back and leads them back to the championship, or just the opposite. If Golden State's up, he returns to the bench and they lose. I think all of it is whether he can physically be out there, because I think he's around the team. He's working with the game plans. And, you know, to be out there for 3 hours, and one thing watching coaches, they move around a lot. They stand, they lean, they kneel. And I think with his spinal problems, I think it's going to be tough for him to be out there for 3 hours.
My thing with this is, even if they win, like, I feel like the parts about a celebration, a championship celebration, are the parts of that he can't be around, like the unpredictable movements, the loud noises, the, you know, champagne spraying. Like, I feel like that would all be negatives to his condition. So, like, even if they go on and win, it would be hard for probably him to even enjoy the moment of celebration. But how about this? You have the NBA Finals for the first time ever, three straight years where it's the same teams. But the Game 1 coach is likely to be three different coaching matchups within them. David Blatt versus Steve Kerr in Game 1 in 2015. Last year, Ty Lue versus Steve Kerr. And this year, Mike Brown versus Ty Lue. probably. So that would be very strange. You have, you know, first time ever the three match in the NBA Finals, but all of them had a different coaching matchup.
Are you surprised that the Celtics and Lakers, as many times as they've met, didn't do it 3 years in a row? Because I was kind of surprised.
Me too. I was like, did they control the 80s? Like, it was an upset when one of those teams didn't make the NBA Finals. And even, you can go back to like the 60s and those two teams were also controlling things. So to think that, you're right, this Warriors and the Cavs would be the first time ever three straight years the same teams made it. That is a bit of a surprise.
What if you went to bed 20 years ago, the old Rip Van Winkle story? The Warriors and Cavs were both terrible. And you woke up 20 years later to see them in three championships in a row. You wonder what in the heck's happening in the NBA.
That LeBron guy and that Steph Curry guy, certainly valuable to those franchises.
And speaking of the NBA, the New York Knicks currently have the 8th overall pick in the NBA draft. However, after missing the playoffs the last few years and being the laughingstock of New York, they're looking to add a second pick later in the first round. The Sporting News has reported that earlier today, the Knicks and Trailblazers are considering a trade. Trailblazers currently own three first-round picks at 15, 20, and 26 in the upcoming draft. While talks are in the early stages, it is unclear what the Knicks are actually willing to give up. Knicks president Phil Jackson has already said the Knicks are not going to trade any future first-round picks as part of the deal.
So if you're not going to trade any future draft picks,
yep,
and your roster is what it is, what do you want to trade?
So you're going to trade your first for two of theirs?
Well,
is that what they're hinting at?
That seems like the only thing you can trade. If you said you're not going to trade any future draft picks, it's not like the Knicks are filled with attractive assets that other teams value. So I don't see what else you have to trade except this year's first-round pick to move down.
But would you rather have... Would you rather have 15 and 20 than 10? I don't know that I would.
Absolutely not. Not in the NBA
draft. The way the things have run, I just count on the Knicks to make the wrong decision, whatever that decision is. I mean, whether it's making the trade or if they hold the pick, picking somebody that ends up being a bust.
I mean, there are people who think Phil Jackson is trying to get fired. Like, there are some people who think he's doing moves specifically for him to get fired, thus get paid to leave. Like, you can't quit and give that money up, but if you get fired, you get to keep that money, so you're in a position of power, but want to get fired, what you have to do is make bad moves for your team.
And you can't get fired for cause, like by doing something stupid.
Like show up to work naked or something like that. Which I'm sure you could probably do. You got to show up to work, though. That's the thing about Phil Jackson. He's always in L.A.
Does he even show up to work at this point in New York? He may just stay as far away as possible. And we'll end the sports update by saying while Jared Goff's first year in L.A. was rough, first overall pick in 2016 went 0-7 as a starter with 5 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Good news, he's got a new coaching staff with Sean McVay coming over to take over as head coach. Bad news, McVay's not 100% sold on the Rams QB, saying after their second week of OTAs, quote, "We're trying to win football games, and whoever feels like gives us the best chance is going to be playing behind center." The only other quarterback on the roster with NFL experience is Sean Mannion, who's thrown 9 career passes. So that doesn't say a whole lot about Goff.
Oh, my goodness. He can't beat out Sean Mannion? Like, he can't walk in the door at OTA and beat out Sean Mannion?
No. Apparently not,
oh my
not right away.
It's funny. Watching Goff play at Cal, I never watched him and saw number one, number one.
He can't beat out Sean Mannion.
No.
Oh, my goodness. What did they trade for him? Like a first, another first, a second, a fourth?
Yeah. 5th overall pick this year, another pick next year.
And dude can't even, in his second year, it's not like, all right, he didn't know the offense or whatever coming in. This is his second year. You can't show up for work and automatically be better than Sean Mannion. If you can't walk in the door and be better than Sean Mannion, you're not worth the number one pick, and you're certainly not worth the number one, then another number one, number three, and a number five, whatever they gave up. Jeez.
When the draft went down, I said the best quarterback in the draft wouldn't be the first two, and so far Dak Prescott's making me look pretty good. The game changer in extreme competitive kayaking is coming June 15th to the 17th of the North Fork of the Payette River. See extreme kayak racing at this annual world-class event showcasing the best big water paddlers. It's brought to you by Toyota, one of the top sponsors of the North Fork. Attend the awards ceremony at the Egyptian Theater in downtown Boise. That'll be Thursday, June 15th. Details available at KTIK.com. Coming up next, it's Quick Hits. Whose postseason streak is more impressive than LeBron's? And what was the biggest story in the Mets' loss that really sums up their year? That's next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Time now for Quick Hits, where Chris and I tackle four topics in rapid-fire fashion. Let's go.
Topic number one.
All right, Chris, whose final streak is maybe more impressive than LeBron's?
Mike Breen, the commentator, play-by-play for ABC / ESPN. He's doing his 12th straight NBA Finals, which is a record. Nobody's done more NBA Finals than Mike Breen, which is hard to believe considering even he in an article says he doesn't really consider himself the voice of the NBA because Marv Albert's still around. And when people hear, you know, NBA basketball, Kevin Harlan's name comes to the top, although he's never called a Finals. Bob Costas is called some. Going back, Dick Stockton has called some, Brent Musburger, but nobody's called more than Mike Breen, which, you know, in the era of 2017, we think we're past the age of the legendary, bigger-than-life broadcaster. For somebody to be doing it as long as Mike Breen has done it, that's, you know, pretty impressive.
I would have guessed Dick Stockton from CBS. Of course, the broadcast started with ABC, then went to NBC, then went to CBS, and now back to ABC. So obviously, if you're with the right network, you're going to get a chance to do it. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons nobody has a streak in the Super Bowl is it bounces around from network to network. So Joe Buck might have a Fox streak, or Jim Nantz might have a CBS streak, but never more than one year in a row because they moved to other networks each time.
If I had to pick my favorite play-by-play guy for basketball, I think I would pick, you know, Kevin Harlan. I think Ian Eagle is really fun to listen to, too. But Mike Breen's right up there as well. So, you know, I don't think anybody's ears are cringing with Mike Breen on the call for these many NBA Finals. But it's funny because Marv Albert, would you say that the Jordan-Albert marriage kind of made them both a little bit greater? Like, a spectacular move by Michael Jordan kind of helped build up the play that Jordan did.
And you hear Albert's calls on the clips of the Jordan. So, yes, yep, they were sort of there together.
And the Mike Breen-LeBron James match made in heaven, if you will, because it seems like, you know, every year LeBron's in the Finals and Mike Breen's there to call it.
Topic number two.
What is another sign that it's been a bad year for the Mets?
Well, it could have been Jacob DeGrom getting hammered for 7 runs in 4 innings yesterday in a 7-1 loss to the Brewers. And maybe that precipitated the next thing that happened. Mr. Met, the big baseball-headed mascot for the Mets, pulled a Nick Duncan. Uh-oh. As he was leaving, going underneath the runway, he turned and gave a gesture, the half a peace sign, to some Met fans. But in this age of social media, it was a bad move.
Caught.
Because it was caught, it was placed up online, people could see it. The Mets had to issue an apology. And unlike Duncan, this Met is out. He's going to be out. Multiple people do Mr. Met, but whoever was inside the costume yesterday is out as Mr. Met.
Okay, so number one, isn't the whatever job interview that you need to become a mascot, like, how do you deal with people? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like the whole job of a mascot is you're anonymous, so you have to just, you know, deal with people. You don't even have to smile because, you know, the Met mascot smiles for you. Just don't do anything embarrassing like that. Like, how can you get that upset as the mascot when your number one, your only responsibility is people pleaser to do something like that? It's, to me, silly.
And I'm wondering if maybe people were throwing things at him. I mean, what would cause you to be that upset if you're inside the costume?
If anything, like, have the ability for the mask or the face to go to a frown. Like, maybe if you wanted to show some kind of displeasure, but that's the only way a mascot could show displeasure because it has a happy look on its face the entire time is to give somebody the finger. But what are you doing when you're a mascot flipping off your fans?
Topic number three.
All right, Chris, what area does LeBron have Jordan lapped in?
Okay, it's, you know, of course, debatable on the basketball side, but when it comes to speaking on important issues, I think LeBron James has lapped Michael Jordan a couple of times on this. You know, Jordan famous for, you know, Republicans buy sneakers too, and, you know, famous for not saying anything except for it was a couple summers ago when he finally, you know, spoke on racial injustice. LeBron James had his home vandalized, had a insensitive word, racially insensitive word on his house painted that he wasn't actually at. Which was media day at the NBA Finals in Oracle, it was spent basically talking about this incident, and this is what he said.
But it just goes to show that that racism will always be a part of the world, a part of America. And, you know, hate, you know, in America, especially for African-Americans, is living every day. And even though that, you know, that it's concealed most of the time, Even though people hide their faces and will say things about you, and when they see you, they smile on your face. It's alive every single day.
LeBron is about as, you know, socially aware and able to speak on matters of importance. Perhaps it's just the confidence in himself that he's been a public figure since he was 16 years old on the cover of Sports Illustrated, that he's so confident in himself that it doesn't matter to what other people think about him. But I do admire how he's able to speak and, you know, sometimes take the game of basketball or what happens to him and turn it into a bigger message.
Again, I just can't understand why somebody would think they would want to do that. I mean, it just, I don't know. It's unspeakable to me that, you know, we have people in this country that would do that to somebody's property and house.
Topic number four.
What would keep you from playing in the state finals in high school?
Nothing would keep me if I was on that team. But my wife, who played high school softball in New York, the one story that I got out of it was that they were in a championship game for the Long Island Championship, and one of the girls who was a starter didn't play because she went to the prom. They ended up losing a close game. My wife took the second base position instead of left field, and they lost 2-1. Well, that happened in New York again. Happened yesterday. There were four seniors that three of them decided to play in the semifinal game at 10 in the morning. All three of the four, the fourth one didn't come to even the semifinal game, left to go to the prom. Because the prom was 60 miles away from where this playoff was. So they were four starters down for the championship game and lost 8-0.
This is a really good debate. Like, how you said you wouldn't miss it for your prom. Like, you
no.
said you would probably go.
I mean, I would try to go late, but maybe that wasn't possible. No. It cited the fact that players had bought dresses. They had also paid $200 tickets that included dinner. The dinner started at 5:30. The softball championship started at 2.
If you're a teammate, how would you feel about that?
I would probably not feel pretty happy about that. I mean, maybe if I was the one that got a chance to play, maybe, but your chances of winning certainly would go down because your lineup that normally was there wasn't there.
Yeah, I'm saying you're one of the teammates that plays, but you're just a junior who's really good, and these seniors decided that the prom's more important, more valuable. I don't, if it was a guy's sport, would that be different? Like, I feel like, you know, guys and girls, they both like the prom. Like,
right.
That shouldn't be a gender-specific thing with this. But I feel like
there
would be more criticism
of a guy
if a guy did not play in the championship game because of a prom.
I think you're probably right. I think this is viewed as the story kind of question whether they should or shouldn't have. I think with a guy, it would probably be, I can't believe it.
Yeah. And this is like, well, the prom's really important. That's a tough one. I think if I was a teammate, I would probably be upset. Like, dude, prom's one day, and it's something you're supposed to remember for the rest of your life. I get it. But this championship game is something that I was supposed to remember for the rest of my life, and we lost 8-0 because you weren't there. And it's not guaranteed that I'm going to back, but it's the senior, for all the work that they've put in, and I don't know how often they won state championships, but let's just
didn't
assume
specify
that this was the first time that they've gotten there.
But
it's really hard to, even if I'm the guy going to the prom with the girl, like, as a guy, I have to be understanding, like, all right, I get it, you're in a championship. We'll have a fancy dinner some other day, and we'll go dancing. But I understand that this is an important game for you.
If I was the date, I would go to the championship game with her.
Yeah, absolutely. I might even wear my tuxedo at the championship game. It's a prom and a game at the same time.
So a bad look for the high school that ended up getting there. That was St. Anthony's, lost to Moore Catholic 8-0. When we come back, we've got our own coach to help us break down the NBA Finals. How does Cleveland win? Chris thinks they are. We'll see if Coach Nick agrees with him. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. NBA Finals start tonight, and I think even the most casual fan could probably name three or four players for each of the teams. And I think that's why this series is going to be entertaining to most that are watching. I thought I was going to be bold, Chris, when I picked the Warriors in 7. Everything I'm seeing sees Warriors in 5, Warriors in four, something like that, where the Warriors win easily. You went even further than I did. You picked the Cavs.
I got the Cavs in six. I think we're even two and two going into game five, and game five is your classic. And like game seven was last year, game five is your decisive one. LeBron goes to Oracle, goes 40, 10 and 10 like he's done before. Like, his numbers against the Warriors in the finals, straight up insane. And then they close it out at home in six. And I think there's problems that the Warriors have matching up, and I would like to talk to a basketball coach about that. And guess what? We have one.
It is Coach Nick from bballbreakdown.com. Coach Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Certainly a great day with the finals beginning. Of course, this is the three-peat, if you will, of Golden State and Cleveland. What about this one is different and similar than the previous two?
Well, I suppose you can, you know, start with Kevin Durant being the most different as far as the Warriors go and how that's going to match up. And also what we do get, and I'm finishing a video right now on this, is the Kevin Durant versus LeBron James matchup overall, which is going to be really exciting. We don't always get a final that has these, you know, two players at the similar or the same position guarding each other.
Coach Nick, if I were to give you a worst case, best case scenario for both of these teams, give me one thing that would fall in to make this, if this happened throughout the whole series, it would be the best and worst case for each of these teams.
All right, well, let's see. The worst case, I think, for the Warriors is if the Cavaliers come out ultra physical, the referees allow that and get them way off their rhythm, they're not shooting well from three. They're turning the ball over a lot, and that lets the Cavaliers get into that series. And, you know, I don't think they're going to win the series anything earlier than, like, six or seven games, but that would be probably the worst-case scenario for the Warriors. On the flip side, you know, the defense for the Cavaliers hasn't been tested. They have a real problem in transition, as they've shown. Now, have they fixed it magically by just being in the finals? They're going to somehow play harder and rotate better? Maybe, but worst-case scenario for them is the Warriors get going and just start bombing from three, start dunking at the rim, and the games get out of hand really early.
Coach Nick joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk. He's on Twitter at @BBallBreakdown. Fantastic videos giving insight and analysis on the finals matchup. You mentioned the Cavaliers' defense. It's been better in the postseason, although it couldn't have been much worse than what it was at the end of the regular season. Has it been a product of them playing better defensively or them just getting lucky?
Well, I think it's a mix of both. I've even seen Kevin Love be better on rotation from the weak side. He's still not good in picking the roles. But over and over again, we kept seeing the other teams, like the Celtics, not get him involved in the pick and roll. And when they did, finally, they'd get good shots. Now, again, when they got good shots, they didn't always make them. They generated quite a lot of open looks every game of that five-game series. They just could not knock them down. And when you compare those kind of shots to, let's imagine, it's Steph Curry or Klay Thompson or Kevin Durant or Ian Clark, or, you know, the list goes on and on. You know, those are not, they're not going to be that many misses if they're that wide open. So I would be concerned on that end if I were the Cavaliers defense. And again, you know, that's the issue. Can LeBron overcome that and be the rover and help? Yes, to some degree, but I still imagine that we're going to see, they're going to get hurt more because the teams they played in the Eastern Conference just weren't up to the same par as the Warriors.
Opening night for the NBA Finals. Bob and Chris here on Idaho Sports Talk, Sports Radio The Ticket, talking with Coach Nick of bballbreakdown.com. When I look at these two teams, they both look better to me on paper than they did last year. Am I barking up the right tree on that? Do we have two teams that are actually, when you look at them side by side, are better than they were themselves last year?
I mean, I think without question, you could sort of argue that maybe the Warriors are not as deep as they were last year, but I just feel that Kevin Durant's overall talent raises everybody up that much higher anyway. And then you now have Kevin Love probably playing the best basketball of his Cleveland Cavaliers career, and so that's important for them because he was sort of still struggling last year to figure out what the heck he was supposed to do on offense and to contribute. So, you know, you got all those guys playing as well as they can. Now, Kyrie's been the one guy who's sort of been struggling, and that's going to be a really interesting matchup between him. And I believe that Curry is going to pick him up and guard him, a bit or a lot. So we're going to see how that matchup plays out because neither of those guys could probably do that well against each other. They're that good. So I think this is probably the rubber match is going to be the time when everyone's healthy. and we're going to see, you know, everybody playing pretty close to as well as they're going to be able to play. And this is going to be one for the ages.
And last year it was slow it down bully ball when Cleveland was on offense. They would hunt out Steph Curry, whether it's with Kyrie handling the basketball or LeBron handling it. Whoever Curry was guarding is the one who sets the screen, and it caused a switch. And now all of a sudden Curry has to defend on an island, and it didn't work out too well for Golden State. What has changed to allow Golden State to handle that better, if at all?
Well, you know, it's a good question. And by the way, just to defend Curry, because I have done a video that, you know, showed how good he is on defense, and people still don't want to believe me, but there isn't a point guard in the universe that's going to be able to guard LeBron James. So let's just get that straight. You know, that would be what they'd do with anybody. So there's a couple things they could do, which would be, as Curry's man, like Kyrie, is heading up to go to ball screen, because it's pretty stagnant. They don't really run much to get that ball screen. They simply call him out. He runs over. He screens for LeBron. You could switch that on the way up and have a different, bigger, stronger defender suddenly guarding the ball screener. That means that Steph will have probably even a bigger player. But that's not so bad. You maybe get the ball out of LeBron's hands a little early, and then they would rotate. But I don't think the Warriors are worried about that. I feel like they'd be more than happy to watch LeBron James back Steph Curry down and, just isolate on him and take shots rather than setting his teammates up for easy shots, which is really what kills everybody when they play them. So I honestly feel like we're going to see that happen. Maybe they double a little bit, and maybe they let Steph try and, you know, hold his ground as much as they can and just see what happens from there.
Coach Nick of BballBreakdown.com on Twitter at BballBreakdown, joining us on Idaho Sports Talk. Now, on the opposite end with Steph Curry, I remember last year in the finals, the frustrating thing about Golden State was their insistence of running what they call their flow offense and not going to isolation-type basketball. Now they have Kevin Durant, of course, who's an isolation specialist, but even Steph Curry, when he has a matchup of Kyrie Irving on him, how much will Golden State have to rely on isolation versus their normal flow cutting and all the other things that they do?
Well, I think they would probably want to avoid that as much as possible, simply because philosophically they want to move the ball and create easy shots, which I wouldn't argue with. The problem you have is that they can be, when you get Steph Curry off the ball is when you can rough him up, and the referees seem to tolerate that. And that's when you need to get him back on top, setting high ball screens or letting him ISO where you have some protection, because again, you can't rough up the ball handler nearly as much as you can when he's off the ball. So that would be one thing that they'd be looking at. And if the offense does bog down, and that's the thing about motion flow offenses, sometimes it's going so fast, you don't get the right alignment that you like, because they have a great play where they throw the ball to the low post, and then they split two players at the elbow or at the three-point line in front of that. Well, ideally, you want to throw it down to Draymond, and then you have either Steph and Clay involved or, you know, Durant and Steph or one of that kind of combination. But sometimes when you're running this flow offense quickly, you end up having weird combinations and you're not getting the most pressure on the defense. And that is an issue that happens with any kind of flow motion offense. And so that's when you need to be able to look for the out-of-timeout plays where they can really control where these players start. And that's what's going to get them back into that, into their attack. But without question, if it bogs down and they are having trouble, they can simply give it to Durant. He's not going to be able to get roughed up. He's pretty strong. He's got that inner, you know, core strength. And that's going to be a huge difference in free throws, generating them, getting the other team in foul trouble, and then just getting buckets.
Coach Nick of BballBreakdown.com on Twitter at BballBreakdown here on Idaho Sports Talk. And sounds like you are favoring Golden State. Do you have a prediction?
You know, I've been saying Golden State in six. You know, I don't think anybody is really going to predict the Cavaliers in anything less than seven, if they can even do that. It just feels like there are too many weapons. Let's not forget, Golden State's the best defensive team in the league as well. And so, they have probably three or four legitimate defenders for LeBron James, whereas nobody in the East even had one. Maybe they even one team had one. So, you know, you look at that on paper, you look at it, and you try and picture this, and can you tell I'm excited about it, having waited this damn long to watch these games?
It's like a football game.
You know, I can't picture too many scenarios where the Cavaliers can pull it out versus the myriad of scenarios where you can see the Warriors winning this thing.
Coach Nick, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
You got it. My pleasure.
All right. That was Coach Nick, bballbreakdown.com. You can get the best of Sports Radio The Ticket with the must-have ticket app at iTunes or KTIK.com. You can access social media posts, live broadcasts, featured interviews and conversations, as well as entire shows. It'll be an Idaho sports lover's dream. Download the Sports Radio The Ticket app today. When we come back, Chris is one of the guys. He says Cleveland in six. We'll get his bullet points of why it's going to happen next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. With Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis, NBA Finals start tonight at Oracle Arena in Oakland. Idaho Sports Talk here, Sports Radio, 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket. How the series plays out. Generally, in the past, when you had the finals, not the other games, but the finals, because of distance, they went 2-3-2. Two games, the better record, then three games, and then the last two. You can make a case, Chris, if that format were in last year, that maybe Golden State wins.
Yeah, you brought that point up, and I really did agree, if you think about it, because what happened in Game 5? It was Draymond Green was suspended for that game, and Golden State was unable to close out the series. But remember, that was in the Bay, which would have meant, like, if you had the 2-3-2 format, that game would have instead been in Cleveland, meaning the next two, 6 and 7, would have been in the Bay. Much easier to close that out when you have two at home, 6 and 7, versus the 1-1 format where it's one in Cleveland and one in Golden State. I do think the 2-2-1-1-1 format is the more fair format, and especially if you follow that formula throughout the entire playoffs, to switch it up for the finals is a little bit of a head-scratcher to me. I do like the 2-2-1-1-1 if you had it that way leading up to it, and I think that probably saved Cleveland last year.
Baseball has always had the 2-3-2, and I think the biggest reason that they had it was, until this year, home field has never been determined by best record in baseball. It's always based on, up until the All-Star games, whoever had the right year, whether it was an odd year or an even year. One of the years the American League hosted, one year the National League got to host first. So, and also because of travel, and they wanted to play more games in a row without travel, it was easier to play two travel day, 3-2. At between the 3 and the 2, there'd be a travel day as well. So I think because baseball was first, a lot of sports copied it. Hockey used to play 2-3-2, and now they're on the 2-2-1-1-1. And I think the reason for it is because the best team will never be in a situation where if the home team were to win every game, you'd be down.
Yeah, that's also a good way to look at it. And also travel has been a lot better than it used to be in the past. So the 1-1-1 part, you can handle it a little bit better in 2014 when the NBA started going to the 2-2-1-1-1 for the finals than you could back in the 80s, back in the 70s when traveling was certainly a lot more difficult, although it doesn't help the media members. Media members don't get the charter life where
no.
The team gets to.
Maybe if you're
nice,
the voice of the team, you might find your way on the team.
That's
charter.
That's true. So strive to be the voice of the team. Key for the Cavaliers, you mentioned that bullet point type of reasons why I think the Cavs will win this series in six games. Tristan Thompson is uniquely qualified for a matchup against Golden State. I feel like it highlights every strength that he has without exposing any of the weaknesses that he has, and the fact that he's just not very tall for a center. It's not like Golden State's going to bring out some Joel Embiid, 7'2" dude who has post moves, and Tristan Thompson's just not going to be able to handle him on the block. So the weakness of Thompson being only 6'9", 6'10", is not going to be that costly. But the benefit of him being a pretty quick, he has quick feet for a big guy. So he's able to switch out on Curry. We saw it last year when Steph was really hobbled with the injury. Steph could not shake Tristan Thompson. Even in the Christmas Day game that they had earlier this season, Steph was healthy for that game, and Thompson did an okay job when he was forced in a switch while he was defending Draymond Green, because that will probably be his primary assignment when it's starters on starters. Steph Curry and Draymond Green, the 1-4 pick and roll, that's their go-to set. Tristan Thompson can switch it, be confident enough to defend him on the perimeter. And then on the other side, when Golden State does their main defense, which is switching pretty much everything that, every screen you set, they'll try to switch it, so they always have a guy in position. If there is a smaller guy on Tristan Thompson, thanks to a couple of switches, he will punish them on the offensive glass. And while the NBA has basically gone away from offensive rebounding, a lot of teams really want to do it anymore. Tristan Thompson is an animal on the offensive glass. So let's say, after a couple of switches, it's Klay Thompson who's stuck defending and having to box out Tristan Thompson. Thompson's going to get a few extra possessions. You let LeBron, you let Kyrie have more shot attempts, plus with the Golden State tendency to turn it over a little bit, that's where Cleveland can make up a lot. Even if they're not as efficient as Golden State is, they might have more opportunities because of the offensive glass.
Cleveland outshot Golden State in the series last year. Can you win the series without outshooting your opponent? I would think no.
Outshooting from a percentage standpoint?
Mm-hmm.
You can if you get more shots. And that's the thing about the Warriors. They can let you get more shots than them because of their turnovers, which can be high when they're off their game. And they don't have a big-time rebounder that they want to play. Like, Zaza will probably be run off the floor. I wouldn't be surprised if Zaza by game two or game three isn't starting anymore, because their more advantageous lineup is with Draymond Green at center.
Well, let me change the question. Can Golden State win the series without outshooting Cleveland? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I mean, if they go cold, they're not going to have the advantage of extra possessions. I don't think they're going to dominate the offensive glass. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe the math says they hit so many threes that it doesn't matter if they shoot a lower percentage, but Cleveland takes more threes than Golden State does. So if the percentages are similar or Cleveland's a little bit worse, there's a very high likelihood that it's Cleveland that has the higher total of three-pointers made because of their LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and other than that, space them out with shooters unless Tristan Thompson's in the game. So there's another check mark that's in the Cleveland favor.
Last year, Golden State was definitively better from three. Not percentage-wise, but mm-hmm. numbers-wise. They made 94 threes to 56 made by Cleveland. You think that number's going to be a lot closer this year?
Yeah, it'll be a lot closer. And you get Korver in the mix, although with some of the reserves, if you go down the line, like, I don't know if Kyle Korver can play against starters. Like, a lot of the Cavs bench guys, I don't know if they can play unless Golden State has a lot of bench guys in at the same time, because who's Korver going to guard? Like, Korver in this series, like, he's going to be lost if he tries to guard. Like, he'll probably have to stick him on Durant, or you'd have to stick him on Draymond, and that's just not going to work out for you. And same with Channing Frye, who's one of the main bench big men for Cleveland. As soon as he's on the floor, the eyes will light up, and all right, let's go small, have him make sure he's is guarding Draymond Green, and now Curry, Draymond Green, pick and roll. Channing Frye is going to get lost.
You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM. The Ticket. Bob Beeler, Chris Lewis talking about the NBA Finals that starts tonight in Oakland. Chris, I think officiating is going to be key. Do the main guys get to play more minutes? And I think that injury that rears its head in the middle of the series could be a big factor as well. If somebody, like if Irving were to get hurt, if Curry were to get hurt, or the suspension of a Green, I'm going to lump that where somebody can't play. I think we're going to see the starters or the main players logging a lot of minutes. I agree with you that Golden State, I think, is going to get to their Hampton 5 pretty quickly.
Now, with Golden State and fouls, the last two finals, the fact that Steph Curry's been involved in so much action on defense, he tends to pick up fouls. And the last finals, it was like silly stuff. Like, why are you reaching with two fouls already in the early first quarter? They're keeping you on the floor, and you're still out here aggressively reaching. Like, part of it you could say is officiating, well, if they call it tight, mm-hmm. but the player also has to be mindful of the situation. Like, when you have three fouls in the second quarter, but they can't afford to have you on the bench, can you make sure you're on the floor without fouling, but still not be a layup line, a turnstile for the other team to just completely take advantage of? But on that note, Golden State's big four, they haven't played as many minutes. They're typically in the low 30s, while Cleveland's Kyrie and LeBron, they've played above 40 minutes in a lot of these playoff games. Will there be an advantage for Golden State now that they have nothing else to reserve themselves for, so they can play their big four more minutes? Will that be beneficial, or would it be a negative that they haven't really stretched themselves out yet? And if they're playing minutes 40 through 45 of a game, if they have to, will they be a little tired because they're not used to playing that much in a game? So I'm looking forward to seeing how that manifests itself.
The best thing for both teams, I guess, is the fact that there's enough rest in between games.
Yeah.
It's not like where you're going to get two games in a row. You're never going to see that.
Yeah, it was still, though, 43 minutes in a game is 43 minutes, and if you're not used to playing 43 minutes in a game, I don't know what you can do in practice to help prepare yourself for that.
Fish, we got an update coming up. What do we have in it?
Well, a Boise State coach and a Capital High grad both made the College Football Hall of Fame ballot for 2018. Plus, don't look now, but it looks like the Warriors' core may be here to stay thanks to Kevin Durant.
That's all coming up in the update. Now we've got your chance to get some new Golden State, Cleveland, or NFL gear at the Pro Image. They're located in the Boise Town Square Mall, the Karcher Mall, or the Village at Meridian. Be the ninth caller right now at 424-9300 to win the $50 gift card. That's 424-9300, and keep listening until 6 tonight for your chance to win every hour on Sports Radio The Ticket.
And the Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by the Oahe Tavern. $5 is all it takes for the hippest downtown Boise spot for happy hour. Meet your friends and bring your fives to the Oahe Tavern Steak and Sea on 11th and Main. Well, Boise State defensive backs coach Ashley Ambrose and Jake Plummer, the Capitol High graduate, have both been named to the 2018 College Football Hall of Fame ballot. Ambrose played defensive back for Mississippi Valley State in the early 90s. Meanwhile, Jake Plummer played quarterback for Arizona State in the late 90s.
Kind of tough to get on. A long list of names in both categories. You've got to be a first-team All-American. There is the FBS level, and then the other ones are called the divisional level, which Ambrose is on. You select 12 out of the FBS category. Only four get it from the divisional. So both of them, it's an honor just to get on the ballot. Even tougher to move forward to get into the Hall of Fame.
I have to imagine, what, at one point, you know, Kellen Moore is going to be on this some point down the line. So, you know, congratulations. Well, I guess. Do we say congratulations when you're on the ballot, or do we say congratulations if you get in?
I have a friend from UMass that's on the ballot, and he definitely took congratulations on getting it. We're trying to get Coach Ambrose for tomorrow. So maybe we can ask him. I think it will be congratulations just to find your name on the list, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think that would be worthy of a congratulations.
And speaking of Boise State, the color schemes for the 2017 football season have been released. The home opener against Troy will be tricolor. New Mexico will be an orange out. Virginia will be a blue out. Wyoming will be blue and orange. Nevada will be checkered. And Air Force will be Spirit Day, where you can wear any Bronco color of your liking.
I always like to wear on game day, if it's an orange out, I'll wear an orange shirt that day to the game. I'll wear a blue shirt if it's a blue out, so I'll make sure that I have my orange shirt ready to go for New Mexico, my blue shirt ready to go for Virginia. I guess when it's a multiple color, I can choose, right?
All right, you wear one half of one and half of the other. That's how you have to do it. Now, what was the last one? Spirit Day?
I guess
Air Force.
Day, yeah.
Wear your own. Translation is going to be cold, so make sure you just wear whatever
you,
kind
wear
of coach
your warmest
you
Bronco gear, yeah.
My favorite one story on what you wear to a basketball game involves my basketball partner, Abe Jackson. And that was when TCU was in the Mountain West. And we show up down there. What color shirt do you think Abe had on courtside in Fort Worth?
What color shirt? Purple?
Purple!
Oh, no.
He didn't realize that TCU was purple.
See,
gotta be careful. You don't show up with a green shirt for Colorado State,
like,
right?
The coaches get mad. Like, if you showed up on the bus, like, you know, if we're facing Colorado State for women's basketball and I'm wearing a green and gold tie, they're like, wait a minute, what's going on here? So you gotta be careful with that. Plan your wardrobe ahead. Now, can we have a new trend other than you mentioned the basketball one? I feel like the shirts in basketball have become almost cliche at this point. Like, is there something else, another layer that we can take it to? Because I think in 2002 it was cool when everybody in the stands was wearing the same color shirt. Everybody was in white. It really had a cool effect. We're still doing the same thing in 2017. There isn't a level of graduation we can get to where it's a cooler effect on TV?
No.
No?
I can't think of anything that would be cooler. Unless you gave everyone like those like green spacesuits or something,
when people are sitting in the stands, you don't really see people's legs that much because each row you basically see from maybe the waist up or the stomach up. I think the shirts easily show the most on TV.
We give everyone a mascot head.
Yeah, or something. Everybody holds their foam fingers in the air the whole game. I don't know.
I think people's arms would get tired.
That's fair. We can think about it. We can take this to the next level and be the new era of game promotions.
The new era. There you go. Speaking of game promotions, always a promotion for Boise State is the Blue Field. Now it also will be the promotion for Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. They have been approved by Boise State to install Blue Turf Field. Boise State owns a trademark on all non-green fields being installed, meaning they must give approval to any school looking to do so. College plans to install the field either in the summer of this year or in the summer of 2018.
Now, can Boise get something in return for this?
They didn't get anything here. There was no cash moving hands.
How about corn? Like, Iowa's known for corn.
Isn't Nebraska known for corn?
That too. That's a whole area of the country. That's all the same.
Luther College is hoping the blue ends up rubbing off as being good. Looks like they won 3 games last year.
Uh-oh. So they need something to bring people out. Hey, come see the blue field.
So maybe we don't want their corn, because clearly it's not producing a good football team.
Losing corn.
Yeah, we don't want the losing corn.
We want winning corn.
Yeah. So you got, come on, Chris. You got to do your background research before you start asking for losing corn, okay? Speaking of winning, though, that would be the Golden State Warriors, and they may continue to do that for a long time, because despite being eligible for a raise in his max contract as a 10-year vet in the NBA, league sources told ESPN that current Warriors superstar Kevin Durant is willing to take less money. That means keeping the Warriors' core intact. Both Durant and Curry are up for new contracts this season. And in addition, Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala will both be free agents. Those have, of course, been two key parts in the Warriors making 3 straight finals. Durant has also said on multiple occasions that he plans on staying in Golden State for many years to come.
You know, I was going to say, the thing that I kind of get with these cap leagues, the players say, I'm not going to take the most, I'm not going to take the most. But sometimes you're the most valuable. You deserve it.
How much money would we pay these guys if there wasn't a max contract and a salary cap? Think about it. Like, Gordon Hayward is going to make as much money as LeBron because of the cap on the max salary. Mm-hmm. So how much money would we pay Gordon Hayward if there wasn't a max? So how much money would we pay LeBron James if there wasn't a max? Like, think about this. Somebody's willing to pay Gordon Hayward the same amount of money as LeBron James, and that's because it's capped at a certain height.
And there's also a floor. You have to spend so much as well. Yeah. So I wonder if the guys that would really get hurt would be the bottom. If there was no top and there was no bottom, or maybe the bottom was really low, I would think the guys that are like, what, 10, 11, 12 on the roster, those guys would lose money?
Yeah, it's funny because, like, who was the Players Association head when the whole max contract thing?
Was it Fisher?
Fisher.
Yeah.
So
he was a good player, but wasn't a star.
But he was one of those guys who got the benefit of having a max contract for the superstars, which means there's more money to spend on role players. And it's funny, now that Chris Paul was the head of the Players Association in this most recent negotiation, suddenly it's the older players who have been with a team for a while get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the more money in the contract deals.
And that's why rookies will never get anything in any organization, because the rookies don't have any say-so in the league, and the union is always going to fight for the people who were in there and leave it to the new guys to take what's left.
Should I be willing to take less money to keep playing with you guys?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to say it too loud.
Speaking of rookies, Jared Goff's coming off a very rough rookie year over in L.A. The first overall pick was 0-7 as a starter. He had 5 touchdowns and 7 interceptions on the year. New coaching staff in L.A., and, well, Sean McVay might not have the most confidence in his second-year quarterback. Speaking during the second week of OTAs, McVay said about the Rams' quarterback position, quote, "We're trying to win football games, and whoever we feel gives us the best chance is going to be who's playing behind center. Right now we feel very good about what we've done. Jared has done a great job getting better, but you always want to make sure that you're playing the guy that you feel gives you the best ability to win football games." The only other quarterback on the roster with NFL experience would be Sean Mannion, and he's thrown 9 passes in his career, and Goff apparently still has to earn his spot.
All right, this next season is 2017. 2019, what do you think is the higher probability? Jared Goff is the Rams quarterback, or Jared Goff is not the Rams quarterback?
I'm going to go with he's not the Rams quarterback.
Not. I think they're going to say Goof, not Goff.
I mean, it was the number one pick that they traded the farm for just last season. And we're now saying that the more probable outcome is that 3 years into his NFL career, he's not going to be on that team. Jeez.
That's what happens when you apparently can't take a snap under center, and it takes you the entire training camp to learn the playbook, as we saw in Hard Knocks.
And then, the other thing, too, though, the people who picked him are not there anymore.
Exactly,
and I always think that's key, that both as a coach, if your GM that hired you is gone, that's a bad thing, and the people who drafted you and liked you and thought you were the number one pick are gone. If you get rid of somebody like that, those people have nothing invested in you.
In case you're curious, the Rams gave up in exchange for Jared Goff their first rounder in that draft, 2 second round selections, a third rounder, and then their first and third round pick in 2017 to get Jared Goff and a 6th round pick in that draft.
I don't know
who they took with that one.
Might be better.
Maybe the question is that person going to still be with the Rams in 2019?
Speaking of first-round picks, another one is on the move. That would be New York Jets former first-round pick Calvin Pryor. He was the 18th overall pick back in 2014, and he has now been sent to Cleveland for linebacker DeMario Davis. Davis played for the Jets from 2013 to 2015. The Jets have been looking to trade Pryor ever since the NFL draft when they spent their first two picks on safeties. Pryor also upset some within the Jets organization when he did not show up for the first day of OTAs last week. While he did show up for the second day, he had been demoted to third string by the next week. Pryor, despite playing in 44 games in three seasons, has two career interceptions.
So was this one of those voluntary OTAs?
I believe so, yeah.
That weren't so voluntary, apparently, because he got demoted by not going? Man, that is the most ironic word in sports, the voluntary workouts.
If they're voluntary, to me that means you don't have to be there. Then don't cry. Make them mandatory.
Which there's a limit. You can't make them all mandatory because there's such thing as rules that the Seahawks are used to breaking. Remember? Yeah. And they kind of broke some of those rules. But it's really unfair, right? That you're getting demoted for not going to a workout that's supposed to be voluntary. Now, the whole thing is, I guess you got to be good enough to make it voluntary. They're not demoting Odell Beckham.
No.
They're not trying to trade Odell Beckham because he didn't go to an OTA.
They might grouse, but that's about it, right?
Well, when you spend your first two picks on the position you play, you're probably not in a good position. And, of course, according to Adam Schefter, the Browns still got fleeced because if they were unable to trade Pryor, the Jets were just going to release him anyway.
Hey, so they got some value for
a guy that they never planned on bringing back in the first place.
So maybe they could have just asked for some footballs or some, cleats.
Vending machine food, most important thing.
You're listening to almost 100 years of Idaho sports broadcasting experience. Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris, Caves and Prater and JP. Idaho Sports Talk is 32 years old with almost 100 years of experience. Listen weekdays from 1 to 6 on Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, quick picks. We've made our picks on the series. Chris likes Cleveland. I like Golden State. Both of us like a long series. But who do we like tonight? That might not be the same. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's time to consult the Magic 8 Ball. Open up a fortune cookie. Or maybe even flip a coin.
I set him into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some quick picks and predictions with Bob and Chris.
Hey, Quick Picks and Predictions is sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories located right inside West East Garden Lanes in Garden City. Another bad night for Bob. 1-2. Chris Lewis takes it at 2-1. You guys both got the Nationals right as Bob once again picks against his Giants. You guys both had the Predators winning, which was nowhere close. Bob fell behind on the Rockies continuing to struggle after we highlighted them on our show.
Now, do you know why he's struggling? I can answer it for you.
Is it a long week?
It's because it's a normal week. It's a normal week. He only wins on short weeks, and I don't see him taking any time off this week. So I'm all.
Today's the last day, so I don't think
we'll see if I can catch you today, Chris. I hope you make three bad picks.
Well, we'll start with the obvious choice. Game one of the NBA Finals is tonight. Chris Lewis, who you got winning, the Cavs or the Warriors?
I picked the Cavs to win this series in six games. One of those wins is tonight. Cavaliers get it done in game one. Oracle crowd, I have a feeling it's going to be a little bit of the wine and cheese crowd. It's not going to be the raucous Oracle that you've seen at some points in the playoffs because these tickets were expensive. So, the crowd's not going to be as engaged as usual. When you have time off, the things that it manifests itself in are poor shooting percentages, especially from distance, and turnovers. I think Golden State's going to have a high turnover account, similar to what they had in Game 1 against San Antonio. And I don't think LeBron's going to get hurt in the game like Kawhi Leonard did against Golden State in Game 1 of the Western Conference Final. So, with that in mind, I like Cleveland tonight.
Bob?
I pick Golden State to win in seven. I think Golden State gets off on the right foot tonight. I think they have too many players to score that all of them aren't going to be down. I think Durant's going to have a good night in his first Warriors appearance for the finals. And I think Golden State takes a 1-0 lead tonight. So hopefully I can pick up a game on Chris right there.
Well, speaking of scores, we've talked about the number of scores on both teams in this series. So, Bob, we'll start with you. Pick number two. Who is the leading scorer tonight in game number one?
Well, I went back to last year's finals to kind of give a pretty good idea. LeBron James was the leading scorer three times, two times outright, and he shared it once with Kyrie Irving. Nobody else led more than twice, and one of those was Draymond Green, who I threw out because I don't think he's going to be the leading scorer. So I'm going to go with the obvious choice, even though I'm picking them to lose. I think LeBron James will be the leading scorer on the floor for either team.
Chris?
And that means you will not completely catch up to me because I'm going with LeBron James as well as the leading scorer for this game. Now, let me just read off some point totals. 44, 39, 40, 40, 32, 32, 41, 41. Those are playoff games LeBron James has had against Golden State in the last couple of years. There's a lot of games above 35 points. I know a couple of years ago it was a lot because, they were missing all their other scorers, so he had to shoulder a huge chunk of the scoring load, taking a bunch of shots. But whether it's low volume of shots, high volume of shots, LeBron's getting 35. In this playoffs, he's averaging about 35. He's going to add in his 10 assists and 10 rebounds, too. And he's going to be tough to solve.
And then we'll end with some baseball. Albert Pujols sitting on 599 career home runs. He hit two in their three-game series against the Braves. Tonight they take on the Twins, who have given up the fourth most home runs in Major League Baseball so far this season. So, Chris, will Albert Pujols hit his 600th home run tonight?
There's not many people who I would say yes on this question because in any individual game, it's so hard to pick somebody to hit a homer. Like, even when it was at Thames at the beginning of this year, it was like hitting a home run in every game. I still felt like it made sense to pick against it because to expect somebody to hit a home run, unless it's like Barry Bonds during that streak where he was killing one out the park, at least one out the park would seem like every single game. I'm going to say Albert Pujols will not hit home run number 600. Maybe if we can get this to the weekend and you give me three games and will Albert Pujols hit a home run over a weekend, maybe I'd be more likely to pick yes.
Bob?
Well, I've left myself with no room to catch up because I'm going to concur with Mr. Lewis here. Lewis has never faced the Twins starter, Adalberto Mejia, tonight. He is a left-hander. Only one of eight home runs this year for Pujols have been against the lefty, and that's in 37 at-bats. He's also struggled against the southpaw. Pujols is hitting 189 this year against lefties. I will also say Pujols does not get it done tonight.
Can I add a bonus one?
What's your bonus one?
Yeah, a bonus pick'em, because aren't the Spelling Bee finals tonight?
Yes.
Can we have a pick? Will it end in a tie?
I already got the tie, because remember, you guys conceded that if there were no hit batsmen.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I say,
will the Spelling Bee end?
Because
in
remember,
tie.
Our friend Paul Leffler.
I think they added new rules, didn't they?
Yeah, our friend Paul Leffler, the Fresno State announcer, is also the commentator for ESPN during the Spelling Bee. And he's mentioned before that they've made it more difficult for them to be a tie, but he didn't say it eliminated the possibility of a tie. And I thought they made a tweak last year that was supposed to make it more difficult to end in a tie. And guess what? It ended in a tie. So, I don't know what the winning word's going to be. I darn sure ain't going to be able to spell the winning word. But
we'll have the winning word for you tomorrow.
But I will say that there won't be a tie this year.
I would kind of agree with that. Okay, I just don't think there'll be a tie either, because I think they've really...
How many ties are you going to have this thing ended in a tie, right? I think it's 3 years in a row where it has been. But it's a fun TV event. I'm surprised it is the same day, though, as the NBA Finals. Because, you know, ESPN... and ABC are the same. ABC has the finals, and I think the Spelling Bee Championship is on ESPN.
They must think that there is enough separate listenership to want to do it. Either that, or which would be a shock, that the television network has no say-so on when this happens.
Yeah, because they move it to a Friday or move it to the Wednesday, which was yesterday or earlier this week, when there knew for sure that there wouldn't be NBA playoff games during those days. But I think it's fun TV. It's compelling TV. Like you say every year, you make fun of people for watching the Spelling Bee. Mm-hmm. Why are you watching little kids try to spell words? But it turns out to be pretty fun. They get into it. You can play along at home, too, and they do a good job with the production of it.
And how many of them do they get that you don't? It's a pretty good percentage, right?
I don't know if I could ever get one. Like, you're the more experienced wordsman.
Well, but that's you're right. I'll tell you, if I get one, I'm happy.
I'd be lost. Follow spelling patterns that just don't even make sense. That's my conclusion after watching the Spelling Bees. Man, we need a new language.
Well, there is one thing for sure. We're never going to have a contest unless he agrees to be just the moderator with Paul Leffler and announcers and a spelling bee, because the rest of us would all be in trouble.
I think you guys should have a competition of working in spelling bee words, though, in your broadcast. Like, Paul Leffler every week should send out spelling bee words that you guys need to be able to use in your broadcast. So and then you all send it to each other. Like, Al Lewis for, you know, Utah State, did he use the word plethory? I don't know. I just made up a word. But, like, yeah, all right, he used
Covefa or whatever that word is.
Covefe. So, all right, let's hear how Al Lewis said it. Let's hear how Ted Leitner said it. Let's hear how Bob Beeler said it. I think that would be really cool. He needs to start this.
Well, we'll see if we can get him on it. We'll see if we can get him on. I think it's great competition, and I find it interesting that ESPN elects to televise that. That you kind of expect maybe on some other network. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Would you? Nickelodeon, maybe?
Kids.
Yeah. Jeff Cade's in studio. He and Mike Prater getting set to take over in a matter of minutes with Idaho Sports Talk continuing from 3 to 6. Jeff, what do you have today?
Well, not only the NBA Finals, but the Stanley Cup's, of course, on the way, and John McMillan won a couple of Stanley Cups a while ago. He lives in town. Rick Bourbonnais played in the NHL, so we'll talk about their careers, some of the players they played with, and what they think about the situation right now without Canadian teams winning the Stanley Cups. Really quite a shock to me when I look back at the long time that it's been since that's occurred. I couldn't really believe that mm-hmm. the Montreals and some of these dominant teams are the last ones to win a Stanley Cup. Of course, a lot of different angles on the NBA Finals, LeBron versus Durant, who needs it worse, super teams, Kerr's role in everything. And then with Kurt Apsey, a lot of questions on kickoff times and jerseys and budget issues. So pretty full show.
Yeah, turned out to be quite a busy week for Boise State news when you get the jerseys mixed in with the early start time as well. So looking forward to it coming up in just a few.
And as we look to the NBA tonight, it is Cleveland and Golden State. The NHL will be back on the ice on Saturday. Jeff mentions about the lack of Stanley Cup teams from Canada. Toronto, who John McMillan played for in the early 60s, they haven't won since the mid or late 60s.
It's crazy how the Toronto Raptors are constantly a contender and the Toronto Maple Leafs aren't.
But they've got a lot of young talent. Look for the Maple Leafs maybe to get it done in the not-too-distant future. Tomorrow, we'll have our take on Game 1 of the series. Will it be Cleveland? Will it be Golden State? Chris and I disagree. We'll be back to talk about it tomorrow at 1. Caves and Prater coming up next. They'll be here at 3 until 6 on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.